Over the past year, cybersecurity started behaving strangely. Attacks began running without people in the middle. Data was taken long before anyone could act on it, and code maintained by a small number of exhausted volunteers became infrastructure millions of systems now rely on. Trust shifted towards math, keys, and automated decisions, and I kept running into early deadlines, failures that didn't look like attacks, and systems responding faster than people could. What stood out was how quickly entirely new kinds of work started appearing around those failures. That's where the opportunity is. Hi nerds, welcome back. I'm Addie. I've spent 15 years in cybersecurity and I break down the tech future before it blindsides you. Today we're digging into the 7 biggest cyber opportunities of 2026. Let's get into it. Why old encryption suddenly matters more than new attacks. The uncomfortable part of post-quantum cryptography is that the risk sits quietly until it doesn't. We've always treated encrypted data like finished business. You encrypt it, store it, and then move on. That assumption held as long as the math held. But quantum computing changes that timeline by shortening how long your past data actually stays protected. That's why adversaries are already collecting encrypted traffic today. They can't decrypt it now, but when the math catches up, they totally can. And the data they're collecting is stuff like authentication flows, VPN tunnels, email archives, API traffic. All of it's still valuable years after capture. Once decryption becomes feasible, that backlog becomes operationally relevant. Government timelines are already locked in. EU members have to begin adopting quantum-resistant cryptography by 2026. Full depreciation of legacy crypto is expected by 2030, for important systems. NIST also finalized its algorithms. Vendors are building them in now. What's missing is the readiness. Today, over 90% of enterprises still have no post-quantum migration plan. Most don't even have a cryptographic inventory. They can't say which libraries they're using, where legacy algorithms live, or how deeply they're embedded into authentication, transport, or internal service communication. By 2026, that becomes a complete bottleneck. Compliance pressure hits regulated industries, cloud providers start enforcing quantum-safe defaults, and procurement teams start asking questions most organizations don't have clean answers to. And the companies that never map their cryptographic dependencies get forced into rushed migrations, often touching systems that haven't been audited in years. Hybrid crypto helps during transition, but it also increases complexity. And crypto agility assumes your libraries were built to swap algorithms cleanly, and most of them weren't. In practice, this turns into infrastructure archaeology under deadline. Most teams aren't staffed for it, and that pressure is already showing up in the market. Post-quantum security is projected to grow from $400 million in 2025 to nearly $3 billion by 2030. And long term, the estimates go much higher. I used to think encryption mostly bought you time, but turns out it also commits you to a future you might not be prepared for. If this feels overwhelming, I put together a free quantum proof your career guide and quiz to help you see where your skills actually intersect with the quantum transition and how people are positioning themselves as the go-to person here. It's linked below. And while the quantum risk behaves quietly, the next category of failure doesn't, because the next one might act on its own. So what happens when software starts making decisions and executing them? Where security models break, when software starts executing intent. The first time an AI agent deletes production data doesn't look like a breach, and that's the problem. AI agents are already baked into operating systems against our will, as well as cloud platforms and enterprise workflows. And they can act, open tickets, move files, modify infrastructure, call APIs, and trigger pipelines. In most orgs, they're running with broad permissions because usefulness comes first and security comes after getting burned. And in 2024 and 2025, we saw what happens under those conditions. Databases got wiped, cloud resources were deleted, and sensitive files were exposed by agents that did exactly what they were told. The instruction chains made sense syntactically, but failed contextually. Prompt injection and indirect chaining exploit this. The model doesn't understand intent, but it does follow the objective function. It keeps executing until it crosses a boundary no one explicitly defined. By 2026, this threat goes mainstream. Forrester's already called it. We'll see the first major public breach caused by an AI agent. When that hits, the framing changes. When it does, the industry will very likely shift. Boards will hopefully start treating agents as the security risks that they are. Insurers will likely ask harder questions. Regulators will demand logs and controls. And from that point on, AI agents will hopefully be treated like privileged actors. Their permissions are scoped, behavior is audited, and execution gets gated. And the security model starts to look a lot like how we eventually learn to handle overprivileged service accounts. This shift creates real demand for threat modeling, blast radius mapping, prompt testing, human versus agent attribution, and instruction chain simulation. Today, most platforms don't support that cleanly. What frustrates me most is how familiar and preventable this all is. We've seen this pattern before with internal APIs and fragile automation tools, but this time the intent is inferred through language, and that context shifts invisibly between prompts. So far, most of the damage has stayed inside company walls, lucky for us. But what happens when the agent isn't the problem? It's the ecosystem that it depends on. How software dependencies became a reliability problem. The software running your system is assembled, not necessarily built. That's been true for a really long time. But in 2025, the scale finally caught up with the trust model. The NPM compromise made that crystal clear. 19 packages were affected, and they were serving more than 2.6 billion downloads per week. And no single organization had visibility into the full dependency chain. This is what supply chain risk looks like now. Attacks against open source ecosystems are up roughly 300% year over year, and attackers are shifting targets away from vendors and toward maintainers, abandoned packages, and inherited trust paths. These are much softer targets with a bigger reach. And maintainer burnout is part of that threat model now. Most maintainers are under-resourced significantly. A majority have considered quitting, and when a critical package loses active stewardship, attackers fill that gap. The reality is most enterprises have no idea how many transitive dependencies they even have or who the heck maintains them. And in 2026, that ignorance stopped being survivable. Incidents like the NPM breach stop being treated like one-offs and become baseline risk. Regulators start asking for SBOMs. Enterprises begin requiring package signing. Provenance checks become default. And suddenly, liability attaches to breach response and to dependency negligence. This creates a new kind of opportunity and not just for tooling. What's opening up is ownership. Teams need someone who can explain what they depend on, why it matters, and what breaks if it's ignored. That work doesn't sit cleanly in AppSec, platform, or compliance yet, which is why it's getting missed. We're talking about large-scale visibility, continuous dependency analysis, CI/CD supply chain hardening, maintainer security programs, and ecosystem sustainability. This is about keeping the software ecosystem actually functional. And what scares me most is how silently this risk builds. Dependencies decay slowly, trust erodes invisibly, and then one update lands and it's already too late. But once regulators start reacting to that fragility, the response doesn't stay abstract anymore. It starts shaping how systems are built in the first place. What happens when compliance starts shaping system architecture itself? Until recently, compliance lived at the surface. It showed up as policies, checklists, and vendor docs. But in 2026, that separation finally breaks. We're starting to see privacy law expressed directly as system architecture. The core question is no longer, is this data protected? It's where is it stored? How long does it stay there? Who can access it? And what borders does it cross? And most systems can't answer those questions clearly. This complexity has been building for a while. There are now over 15 major privacy regimes worldwide. 20 US states already have their own, which to me is a huge win for privacy. Some laws conflict with each other. Others require guarantees that existing systems were never designed to prove. And all of this comes to fruition in 2026 with the emergence of all these new laws that come into effect. The technical debt is the architecture, and by 2026, that debt hits a wall. Some mid-sized companies will exit markets altogether because the cost of staying compliant across jurisdictions becomes unsustainable. Others go the opposite way, and they double down on automation as the only viable way to keep operating. And that shift opens up the real engineering work, architecting storage and data flows that meet regulatory expectations by default, building automation systems that manage localization, retention, and access control, giving privacy and compliance teams infrastructure-level visibility, and helping early-stage companies get ahead of compliance before it becomes a blocker to growth. This is designed under legal constraint, and the market reflects that urgency. Privacy software is projected to grow from just over $5 billion today to $45 billion by 2032. That growth tracks with enforcement. Fines are reaching 4 to 5% of global revenue. As someone who spent a lot of time working in compliance, it seems like a total headache now. It's something your infrastructure either supports or it doesn't. And while organizations are adapting to that constraint, something else is shifting even faster. What happens when the attackers start automating at speeds defenders simply can't match? Why AI-generated attacks are scaling faster than most teams can react. The biggest shift in offensive capability right now is access. AI has collapsed the skill barrier. You don't need deep expertise to spin up a phishing campaign, write polymorphic malware, or build a multi-stage payload. Tools that used to take weeks to operate now run in minutes. Some cut attack prep time by more than 90%. And that changes the economics. Attacks are now limited by how much infrastructure can absorb the output, rather than the old way of just needing to be highly skilled. And defenders, especially SOCs, are already underwater. In 2026, the mismatch gets harder to ignore, and here's what I think will happen. Phishing campaigns will explode in volume. Payloads morph too fast for traditional signatures. Human triage hits a wall, and cyber insurance starts reacting by excluding AI-driven attacks from coverage, either because they're untraceable or considered preventable. That pushes a new kind of automation on the defense side. We need autonomous phishing detection, internal targeting analytics, behavioral threat modeling that assumes attacker scale, not just sophistication. We need pen testing tools that simulate what AI-enabled attackers are already doing in the wild. The numbers are already staggering. AI-generated phishing is responsible for over 80% of attempts. Volume spiked 1,265% last year alone. Business email compromise hit 2.7 billion in losses, and it's only accelerating. If you've ever worked incident response, you know what this feels like. You can't out-human this scale, not anymore. And pretending you can might be the most dangerous assumption on the table. But there's another assumption that's starting to break even faster, and it's happening at the sensory layer. What do we do when we can't trust how people sound or look? Why identity breaks when senses stop being verifiable? You can't build trust on inputs that are trivially spoofed. That's the problem we're walking into. Deepfake content went from 500,000 pieces to over 8 million in just 2 years. Voice cloning is fast, cheap, and increasingly realistic. High-fidelity facial forgeries are already bypassing biometric systems, tricking KYC checks, and breaching identity flows. By 2026, we'll very likely see a major failure, a biometric authentication breakdown that forces platforms to reevaluate what they treat as valid proof of identity. Banks and enterprises will respond first, pulling back from voice and face-based authentication. Governments will follow, and identity systems will pivot towards cryptographic proof, possession-based factors, and behavioral context. FIDO2, passkeys, and hardware keys stop becoming nice to have. Because when someone can fake your voice on a support call or spoof your face in a password reset flow, the blast radius becomes uncontainable. This opens up a whole field of work that didn't exist a few years ago. Designing continuous authentication systems that rely on behavior instead of one-time inputs. Deploying real-time liveness checks to detect synthetic artifacts. Re-architecting identity frameworks that assume inputs are suspect. And navigating the political and UX trade-offs that come with stronger authentication. Detection tech is improving. It has 96% accuracy in some cases, but the arms race is far from over. Attackers only need one slip, and defenders have to be right every time. And most CISOs already know what's coming. Over 70% no longer trust biometrics alone. I didn't expect this failure to start at the input layer, but that's where it's unraveling first, and it's forcing us to confront something even bigger. How do you secure systems when location, identity, and jurisdiction no longer align? What changes when geography stops being a useful security boundary? Remote work broke the assumptions infrastructure was built on. Teams are now spread across jurisdictions, time zones, and legal frameworks by default. That means more access coming from personal devices, unmanaged networks, and geographies that carry unique compliance obligations. By 2026, geography becomes the constraint that stops functioning as a control layer. Identity becomes the only stable anchor, and the traditional perimeter finishes collapsing, especially with a huge rate of offshoring and nearshoring and outsourcing. These things are gonna get significantly worse. By 2023, over 2.2 million remote workers were operating out of Latin America, and South America's tech labor pool grew 70% since 2020. Offshore hiring is still expanding, so is the attack surface. Companies that relied on VPNs or IP-based restrictions are now being asked to secure environments that exist everywhere and nowhere all at once. That introduces a different class of architecture problems. Like, how do you make context-aware access decisions across borders? How do you support secure access for contractors, vendors, and employees operating under completely different compliance regimes? How do you build jurisdiction-sensitive logging without creating blind spots? And how do you adopt a follow-the-sun operational model without compromising auditability? The work is solvable, but it demands a posture shift. Zero trust is the only viable baseline. The real question is whether your organization is ready to behave like the infrastructure now requires. What struck me most this year is how security used to follow the office, but now it follows the person, wherever the heck they are, standing at the edge of a new map. These shifts are already happening at the infrastructure, attacker, and policy levels. What changes in 2026 is the rate of convergence. Security used to have lanes like AppSec, cloud, IAM, and compliance. That map's breaking. The edges are bleeding together. The questions are more interdisciplinary now. The work is more architectural and the demand is coming faster than the job titles can keep up. That is the opportunity. The professionals who notice the shift early, who start building toward it, are going to be the ones defining what baseline looks like on the other side. If you want help stepping into that space deliberately, I put together a free Quantum Proof Your Career Guide and quiz. Because the roles that didn't exist 3 years ago are entire departments now. The ideas that felt niche 2 years ago are multi-billion dollar markets in the making. And 2026, this next turn of the calendar, is a window. If you know where the surface area is moving, you know where to invest your time. You know what conversations to insert yourself into, and you know what problems are about to create budget, urgency, and new lanes of influence before anyone has formal language to describe them. This year, the edge is where the leverage is. The question isn't whether you'll adapt, it's how early you're willing to start acting like this shift is real. If you like this video, you're gonna love my video on how to become unfireable in 2026. I'll see you in that video next.